All right. Hey, as promised, welcome to the BFM studio, Liam Finn.
Hello. Well, thank you.
How's it all going?
It's going good, yeah.
Now, you're based in the States. What brings you home to New Zealand?
I'm here for my father-in-law's 70th birthday, and it timed quite well to release a new song and get to see familiar faces and talk about that coming out too. So it's a good little double ender.
Release a new song, is it part of a wider, bigger project?
Yeah, so I mean, when I was back here during the whole pandemic thing, I started a project called Hyperverse, which was myself streaming the whole writing and recording process on Twitch, which most people know as a gaming website.
Yes, could you?
It still is. I mean, just
Twitch is the thing where they all talk to one another. Is it that one?
Guess so. To be honest, I'm not.
Is it Discord? I don't know.
Yeah, Discord's probably that.
Yeah.
Twitch is like a YouTube for gamers, but they tried to start broadening their horizons and got musicians. Well, they've got a lot of musicians during the pandemic performing on there and stuff. I remember the first person I saw do it was Arca, and I thought that's cool. And I liked at that point, sort of suits Arca to be on a gaming website. And I sort of had this idea to stream the whole process, and they kind of came along and were willing to get behind it. And I sort of saw that as a new part of a new thing, a new kind of movement. And they have the best kind of streaming quality, I think. They've got the best compression rate for audio, and they have a way of making it kind of fun for people to interact with it. So it was really great. It was a crazy experience having people witness my most intimate solitary moments.
Yes.
And so I got pretty deep into that for a couple of months, and then last year I sort of put it in the incubator and forgot about it for a whole year, and then just came back to it this year and finished it off, and now I'm starting to release stuff.
I guess that was kind of my question, because you're performing live in front of an audience on the internet who can send you messages.
Yeah.
Are you like getting pop-ups that you're reading as you're performing, and is that then directing you where you decide to go with the music, or is it more of a you read the messages and then you give the mix a bit of a tweak in post-production or go back and re-record? Or are the songs that you're releasing now, there's many questions here, are the songs you're releasing now essentially the live take, or is it an idea which you've then honed in the studio afterwards?
I think I went into it thinking I was going to write a record, and then eventually I did these few shows at Roundhead where people came to that as well.
Yes.
But what I found while I was doing it was that the improvised kind of performances that I was doing in the first round of writing were coming out really good and really inspired. And I'm reading the comments as I work. I had a screen in front of me where I was performing, and it was really helpful in a way, because it was like having those moments where you'd normally be on your own and lose steam and kind of want to give up or play on your phone or go out for a beer.
Yep.
People would be going, "Nah, this is great. Yes. Keep going." Or, "Nah, that's crap." And so it was actually, they were really involved in it. And there's people that have stuck with it, because I'm still streaming now and still finishing the record, actually. I'm releasing stuff as I finish it. And there's people that have been there the whole time that know the record as well as I do. They're almost like producers.
Yes.
Anyway, so they were pretty involved in it. I mean, I was taking it with a grain of salt, but sometimes it was really helpful. And most of the stuff that I made in that first couple of months is what I'm finishing off now. It had a real cohesive feel about it, and it was fun to work on, and sounded kind of like something that I would have liked when I was 16. I feel like I was channeling my youth and making guitar music again, and you know, it was cool. And I just wanted to go with it and not put, you know, not beat myself up too much, which happens a lot, I think, when you're on your own and you're trying to write a song and you're like, why is this not the best song I've written, and just sort of forgot about anything like that and just went with whatever felt fun.
I guess there's somewhat of an audience there.
Yeah, you just can't self-indulge.
Yes, yeah. Just on that note of a younger you, I saw on Instagram that you've released a bunch of the old Betcha Duper stuff digitally, which maybe it wasn't on any streaming platforms or...
Yeah, there'd been a while that I've been getting messages saying people couldn't find the first Betcha Duper record, the Alpha Betcha Duper. And I kind of, you know, you hear that enough times, and you're going, oh, at first I thought it was kind of cool that you couldn't find it.
Yes.
But then I realized that's, nobody cares that that's cool, except me.
It's on. The funny thing is I occasionally use the BFM CD library. And yeah. I know it's in there. It's just not in the right place.
Yeah, right.
I was just off ear people. I was scrambling. I was like, oh, I know the CDs. It's there.
It's hard to find. But yeah, so enough people, you know, gave me a hard time about it. And I, my friend Bryce the other day just said I couldn't find the song. And
yes.
And it was like, all right, I've got to do it. So I actually just, I mean, I sat down, I think, on Friday and uploaded it to my DistroKid because I'm doing everything independently now.
Yep.
I've got a good handle on it. And it came out yesterday, and I listened to it, and I got all nostalgic and
fired up.
Yeah, it was. It's a great record. It really, it's me. It's teenage me in the. It's songs I've written over like 1999, 2000, 2001, maybe. It really takes me back.
Sometimes it's good to like just get that little kick where you're like, oh, old Liam, you're a good bugger.
Yeah. And I'm like, I wouldn't listen to anyone back then. I was like. So driven and thought I really knew what was right, and I'm like, it's pretty good. I could have probably listened to someone.
Should we take a listen?
Yeah,
let's have a listen. All right, Betcha Duper Super Day. Here we go. Come on.
It's gonna be all super.
Oh, what a tune.
it's a rocker. I believe we were kind of trying to do our best Datsuns at the time, I think.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. They were pretty hot at the time.
Yeah. That whole, blowing our minds.
That whole crew, definitely cruising pretty hard.
I think that's what happens when I listen to that record, is every song I'm like, oh, that's us trying to do Pavement. Oh, that's us trying to do it at the drive-in.
It's so good, so good. Okay, now back to Liam Finn and your current project with Twitch.
Yeah, where I'm trying to do Betcha Duba.
Yeah. Okay, so just once again, I guess battening down and like just fully ironing out for me the process. So you've got all these live sessions which you've put together on Twitch with you just setting up loops and drumming and playing every single instrument. And that is just the bare bones for you to work. You basically set it up, it's done, dusted, recorded, you've played it. You go back and actually tweak the session slightly?
Yeah, I go back and mostly edit them, mm-hmm. you know, find chunks of the jamming that sounded good and exciting and cut them together, you know. Most of it's using quite extended pieces of it, like not, you know, I could have actually gone quite back with it and made two-bar loops and made more of an obviously looped kind of mm-hmm. record, but I think because it was turning into a bit more of a guitar-y, you know, fast, energetic, punky kind of record, I just sort of used the best sections of the best drumming and the best, I don't know, the most exciting parts mm-hmm. and cut them into, and I did this on the stream as well, which I thought might be boring for people, but everyone seemed to be into it. And sometimes I sang at the time, making up nonsense, and sometimes once I'd edit it down, I'd do a few takes just mumbling over it and mm-hmm. making up melodies and stuff, and which is kind of how I make music these days anyway, really, yes. is just finding a sound that I like and seeing
going back
where
and
that
workshop.
Goes. And
yep.
Yeah, so it was pretty normal for my thing. It just wasn't normal to have people watching.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I said, I kind of took a stepped away from it where things were kind of like half finished.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got kind of sick of it, as that kind of generally happens.
Yes.
But the nice thing was that I was really busy doing Crowded House stuff. So when I came back to it, I was like, oh yeah, that sounds gnarly.
On the lyrical front, did you find that you were more prepared to just dive right in because there was an audience and maybe like just, you know, give it a bit more on that first run of, you know, singing and just maybe, you know, make up more lines of singing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's exactly what happened maybe a week or two in.
Yeah.
Because at first I felt pretty self-conscious, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And my MO was probably to actually just like sing nonsense. But when once I started thinking, oh, what would happen if I actually
just went for it?
Laid it all out there. Yeah. And it was good. And I think a few of the songs, at least one or two lines would have come from the initial moment of, mm-hmm. you know, inspiration. And there's a song called The Howl, which is probably one of my favorite ones on there, that the melody all kind of came in one go. And a few of them actually did this, like the first improvised melody, I've really stuck to it and mm-hmm. written around it and made sure that I've kept the integrity of the initial jam, whereas I haven't really done that in the past. I've kind of evolved, but I like the fact that a lot of this just happened in the moment mm-hmm. and I stuck with it, and you can go and watch those moments in hindsight now that the songs are finished.
Yes. And just rewinding a bit to Crowded House, what the heck have you been doing with them? Because it must be pretty incredible to be out on the road with them in recent times, playing some good shows through the US and such.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, we sort of started the whole Crowded House thing again just before the pandemic happened. So we were, you know, almost finished a record when everything shut down, and mm-hmm. we shut down our session and finished it all in isolation. And that was it was already going really well, and we sort of were tricking ourselves into a similar thing that I was doing, where we hired this place that was supposed to be for pre-production, but it was a really cool studio with some mm-hmm. cool gear, kind of knowing that if we didn't think we were really making a record, we would probably get some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we ended up using on the Dreamers Are Waiting record, is these first takes and first time we learnt these songs that Dad brought.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of had obviously got derailed on touring for quite a while, but we made up for it last year and got to Europe and Australia and New Zealand. We'd managed to do before it all went haywire mm-hmm. here.
Mm-hmm.
We did Australia twice because that got derailed by getting COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to America, which got postponed twice, I think, and did a big month-long stint in May this year, which was awesome.
Nice. Do you have an absolute favorite show that you played with them in the last 3 years or so?
I think we went and did Pink Pop. It's hard to say after three sips of beer.
Yeah.
Pink Pop Festival in Holland,
mm-hmm,
was nuts. It was, yep, just such a huge, beautiful crowd. They've got two stages that kind of face inwards, so you're facing the other stage and there's just people in between you. There's, I don't know, 50,000 people, yep, between. And that it was, we were sort of, I guess, late afternoon, 5 p.m., but still the sun was beating down. And it just was a really euphoric experience. Yes. We had those shows, you walk out on stage with no, you don't know if it's going to sound any good.
Yes.
You know, it's quite, yep, nerve-wracking, but it all sounded awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really, really fun one. I mean, Glastonbury was cool to get to do as well, obviously, yes, but that...
Do you get much time as a punter at either of them?
I wasn't, nah.
No,
just Pink Pop, I was there a bit more, but with Glastonbury, we got there maybe 2 hours before our gig. I saw a little bit of Ziggy Marley play,
mm-hmm,
and then I got ready. Robert Plant walked in on me getting changed.
Did he say hi?
Yeah, I was stumped. I was probably like, and he was just really nice and kind of he wasn't actually even looking, he just sort of walked in, and then I had a 10-minute chat with him, and he walked out again, and I was like, well, that's me. That's my Glastonbury experience.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we did the show, and then I took off with my family before the, you know, before anything else happened.
What do you start your conversation with when you're talking to Robert Plant? What's your opening line?
I was like, can I see your cock? I don't know. I think I was just like, oh, hi, how you doing? And I actually told him, because I met him, I was next to him at a catering trough in a studio in, when I was probably about 18 or 19, yes, or something, and I realized and I kind of went, oh, and he was really nice to me then, and I think the only thing I could think to say to him was, you were really nice to me when I was 18. So, and he was, again, really nice, like a really just a genuine guy. I can't remember what we talked about, but it was satisfying.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Now, onto I Just Want You to Be So Happy. This your new song out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us about this.
Well, it's probably the most joyous track on the record, obviously, mm-hmm, with a name like that. It was a title that came to me when I was here in New Zealand, and I went and saw a Courtney Barnett show while I was making this record, and mm-hmm, kind of been working on this song, and it kind of came to me. There was a real feeling of joy in the room. She's playing on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, and I think I even told her afterwards, like, I had a eureka moment.
Mm-hmm.
But don't sue me, Courtney. Yeah, it's just, I guess it's a song, it's a proclamation of love in a troubled time,
mm-hmm,
which it feels like everyone's had a troubled time, and the world is a bit broken,
mm-hmm,
or maybe not just even a bit, it's a lot broken,
mm-hmm,
and it's easy to wallow in that sometimes and get a bit down, but ultimately music can kind of bring joy, and that's something I can do. And so I wanted to make a song that was my, it's to my beautiful wife, Janina, but it's kind of to everyone, really. I want people to be happy. I'm sure most people feel the same way about everyone they love or, you know, have that effect over. So it's sort of a song that's a bit anecdotal, has sort of certain little stories from our past that kind of came to me in writing the song, but they're a little bit mysterious, I think, when you hear them, but they're obvious and relatable enough that I think people will go, oh, I wonder what that's about, or apply it to their own,
mm-hmm,
lives. And yeah, I hope you like it.
Awesome. Hey, Liam Finn, thank you so much for making the trek in.
Cheers.
Safe travels back to the US, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
A feather on a theory. just want you to be so.